You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 411. I don't have a joke to make about that. It's just what it is. Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the show this evening, out of Los Angeles, California, a place that may or may not be on fire. I'm very unclear about what's on fire, but you could tell me, Mr. Ricky Frankel. Ricky, what's on fire?
I think the fires are not are out now. It's fire season's just beginning, Adam. There's plenty more time.
That's comforting.
It's been almost a year since that hell inferno on the freeway took place. If you remember that, that's been growing back in nicely though. On the 405, and it's starting to become green again. So there's always September and October. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, you got all that to look forward to then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. that's good. Also. Not on fire, at least, like, literally, like, figuratively, though, on fire, Mr. John Gentile.
To quote David Lee Roth, I'm on fire! 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 When she's going down!
Anyway, so, this is a show which we have purposefully... planned less than usual because we had to get the dirt.
Because we usually plan a lot for the show.
The intense, all the hours of work that go into our prep for each of these programs has not happened on this one for a very specific reason. But before we do that, John, are we doing mail this week or is that even out?
We got a little bit of mail. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We got two quickies. This is from Mark. Punk News, what's the deal? No episodes for months? Then five right away, and then nothing again. As Jerry says, what is the deal? From Mark.
The deal is that we were really... Okay, so we record these things every week religiously. Now, whether we edit and release them on the week is usually no. That's usually my fault because I don't bother to sit down and actually post the show. Because once I record it, I'm like, my work is done. Like, I don't fucking care about the rest of you. And by you, I mean the listeners. Like, I don't care. But this time, Mr. Greg, our usual podcast producer, he's got some stuff going on. He's on some secret agent missions, French Foreign Legion, things like that. So he was a little bit behind. So then John has dutifully stepped in to edit those episodes so they can get out. And you just started giving them to me, and I just started posting them. And I wasn't really thinking too much about the rate at which I was posting them, because, again, I don't care. I'm not listening to them, right? But then I got a few Twitter messages from people that were like, holy fuck, calm down. So I calmed down. So as of us recording 411 right now, I think I've released 407?
Yes.
Was 8 today or was 7 today?
7 was today. That just came in today.
All right, yeah. And I have 8, 9, 10 are done. So I guess, listeners, I don't know why I'm telling you my plan, because by the time you hear this, it will have happened. But my intention will be to release another one in a couple days, another one in a couple days, another one in a couple days, then someone will yell at me, but at that point we should be pretty much caught up.
Isn't that like Watchmen, where Ozymandias is like telling his evil plan to Hawkman or whatever, and he's like, why would you tell me your evil plan? And then Ozymandias says, tell you my plans, I've already done it, my good fellow. You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. Very sinister.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure Ozymandias is telling his plan to...
Oh, is it like Wonder Woman? Night Owl? Wonder Woman? Night Owl.
Night Owl, let's say. And the quote is like, yeah, it's something like, he's like, I won't let you do it. And he's like, do it. He's like, I did it 35 minutes ago. And it's like, I think the issue ends there too. It's just like completely subverts the whole, like, the villain is monologuing thing.
Adam, do you prefer the movie version, which has Ozymandias framing the blue guy for blowing up, you know, that city? Or do you prefer the comic book version that has Ozymandias make some weird squid thing appear in the middle of the city?
Oh, God, weird squid thing. I mean, I'm not the kind of person that would normally... I've decided that the kind of people that deconstruct superhero movies to complain about them on the internet are the worst people, and I don't want to
be... Oh, I second that so much.
Right? Like, and I say this as a genuine fan of like genre entertainment, right? Like,
genres?
I like genre. No, genres is a thing. That's a thing.
I'm just being a dick.
But yeah, I grew up watching Star Wars and Star Trek and reading comic books and all this shit, right? But like, all the commentator class is insufferable and I can't deal with it.
Oh, so, my God. Let me just say, the fact that superheroes and comics and like how big Comic-Con is now in San Diego is fucking not only pathetic to me, but just blatantly sad. And all these people are pushing 40 and still into this stuff as much as they were when they were kids. Grow the fuck up.
Let me tell you, people that are wildly into stuff into their 40s are lame, Adam. Let me tell you that. If you're something just like, obscure and nerdy and unique in your 40s.
Hold on. Sheathe your saber, sir. What I'm trying to say is that as someone that grew up with this stuff, on the one hand, I'm kind of like, I'm totally happy. Like, I'll keep going to see Marvel movies and Star Warses and things like that as they come out because you know, in my nerdy heart, that's what I want to go see, and that's great, and I'm cool with that.
I had to pull the plug on Star Wars. Star Wars is my favorite movies of all time, probably. I had to pull the plug, man. It was bad. It was real bad.
I don't care. I'm even fine with the bad Star Warses. I don't care, right? The problem for me is that, like, if I go, and I know this is an algorithm thing, and I have fucked this up by at one point watching a YouTube video or something, but I'll go on the YouTube to kill some time while I'm doing the dishes or something, and there's all these, like, I don't know, like, here's how Thor should have ended. Here's 10 plot holes in Thor. Here's an old, like, and just like reams of this stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, if you, and you listen to it and it's just people like insufferably poking holes in things that don't deserve that level of thought. Like Ricky, like, I'm with you in that the amount of attention that people are dumping on these things is totally out of whack with kind of what I do, and it makes me not want to admit to being a fan of a lot of this stuff.
Because I mean,
like, you look at the internet, and it's just like fucking neckbeards harassing women that have been in Star Wars movies, and you're like, ugh, like, I can't admit to being part of this fandom because that's just gross. I don't want to do that. So, anyways, what are we talking about? How we get into this?
Well, I was just making an Ozymandias joke.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you were asking me about the movie version of Watchmen. I first read Watchmen on the plane to Punk Rock Bowling. And, like, in, like, 2005, I guess. And I was, like, in, like, my second or third year of university. And I knew nothing about it except that it was, you know, much, much loved and heralded, and everyone talked about it like it was the gospel. So I just, like, I had the graphic novel, and I was just reading it on the plane. And I remember I'm, like, I'm flying back to Buffalo from there, and I got to that part where the can we spoil Watchmen? I guess we can spoil Watchmen.
Yeah, we can spoil something that's 35 years old, Adam.
Spoil Watchmen, right? Where
should we spoil the Odyssey? Or...
Yeah.
Like, Oedipus Rex, shocker, it's his mom.
Right. Well, I get to the part where this good monster thing happens, and like genuinely just it fucked me up because like that whole thing is just it's grotesque. Like not the monster per se, because the monster's kind of cartoony, but just like the carnage that surrounds it. And it just goes on and on for like page after page of this just like gruesomeness. And you think even about like how Watchmen was composed, it was all done in like a really tight, was like 9 panels per page for the most part. Like each page was like laid out the same, like from like a grid standpoint, like 3 and 3 and 3. And then you get to those pages and it's just like double page spreads of just like monstrous carnage and everything like that. And then when like the movie, it was just like, oh, it's some blue light shoots into the air, which is like how every fucking movie ends at this point, is some blue light shoots into the air. And I was like, oh, that's not inspiring. So I'm all about the squid, John.
You know what I watch? And I don't know if John knows this, but I think Adam will. I've been watching Letterkenny. And that show rules. Do you know that one, Adam? That's a Canadian show.
It is a Canadian show. It has an incredibly devoted following here. The accents and everything that they're, and that they're using in there,
and
the slang is very much like like certain remote areas of Northern Ontario type of thing. So I'm familiar with like a lot of the
pitter patter.
A lot of the culture surrounding Letterkenny. I am, but it's one of these things that like I frustratingly have never actually seen because I apparently don't have the right kind of TV. So
awesome.
Yeah. There's like up here right now, so like we're cord cutters. We have Netflix, but if it's not on Canadian Netflix, that means it's probably on the subpar Canadian Netflix knockoff that is sort of run by, let's say, Canada's version of AT&T.
Oh, Mooseflix. And that's a good service, Mooseflix.
Yeah.
It's called? It's on Hulu down here.
Right, we don't get Hulu because because you know NAFTA, I guess. I don't know why we don't. I don't know why we don't. Copyright is stupid. There's this one digital channel that I have been trying to not go pay for because we have so much, like, we're so backlogged on Netflix stuff that me and my wife have to watch. But this other service, which I'm sure is crappier, they happen to have like it has Letterkenny, it has like Game of Thrones, it has the HBO stuff, it has like Star Trek Discovery, like all these shows that are on other networks in the States have all been kind of collected by this not Netflix up here in Canada as like a way to get you to subscribe to it. So at some point, I guess I will run out of Netflix things and we will have to start watching that thing, and then I will see Letterkenny. That's my
Letterkenny.
Plan.
Letterkenny is amazing. It's hilarious, and especially for someone that lives in a bigger city to see this kind of stuff in a small town is just super. It's a breath of fresh air and it's really funny. So that's the best I got to contribute to the entertainment realm of the podcast today.
Yeah. I don't know how. I don't even know what we're talking about. How do we get here?
I was making a joke about
have a plan for the show.
What other mail do we have?
Yeah. Oh, that was the mail. That was because someone asked why I bombarded them with episodes in a weird rate. We somehow talked about. Wow. Yeah,
this is from Gerald H. Here's what Gerald H. has to say. Punk news. Is Sean really as young as you say, and is Tom really as old as you say? I find it hard to believe that Sean is throwing punk rock shows at 14. I do believe Tom is as old as he says, although he seems much younger to me. From Gerald H.
Well, okay. Sean just went into his first year of university, right? Or college, sorry. College. Yeah, he just moved into residence today.
And then Tom's not, he's not ancient, but he's, you know, he's...
Tom has children that are Sean's age.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know, he's... Tom's probably, like, what, we're what, middle late 30s? You want to say that, John?
Yeah.
Is that what we want to call it? I'm not sure. I'm 36. I don't know what you call 36. But yeah, so I think that Tom is like 10 years older than us. I think.
Yeah, that's about right.
That seems old.
Nah, 46 does not seem that old to me, honestly, dude. Like, when I was 18, 46 seemed old. Now, to me, 46, it's pretty young. Yeah, it's pretty young.
Yeah, so anyways, that's old Tom is. I mean...
Listen,
that's it.
Anyway, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Send us your mail. We like getting it. Bro.
All right. So we have a purpose on tonight's show, and that purpose is that John just conducted.
Yeah, I would say conducted because I did more than just promote it, you know. But I didn't actually do it. You know what I mean?
You wore white gloves and waved a little stick around.
Do you think it's weird that conductors spend like 3 hours showing their ass to like 2,000 people or whatever?
My entire understanding of conductors front to back is from Bugs Bunny.
I think that's why they do it. They like the thrill. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
No, like Bugs Bunny cartoons. That is my entire understanding of conductors is those few cartoons. Where he was fucking with the conductor of an orchestra.
I think that is why they wear coattails, so their high knees kind of like more covered.
Maybe. I mean, you never see a big fat conductor, though, eh?
I've never seen that.
Granted, I've never seen a non-cartoon conductor, so I don't know what I'm talking about one way or the other. So anyways, yes, John conducted, organized through, dropped? No, not dropped. The second Punk News Summer Soiree, the big show out there in Philly. And we have not spoken, John, since this has happened.
Yeah, I guess not. It was this past. It feels like it was a long time ago, but it was just 4 days ago.
No, so we haven't spoken. There's been some. There are some ups and downs and craziness sort of in the lead up to this show, which you can get into if you wish. I'm not sure how much of the you want to reveal about how the sausage is made, but we want to talk to you about that and get a recap about that. The other thing that we're going to do on tonight's episode is we're going to do a little bit of record collecting because. Based on survey results, you know, some of you seem to like that, so we're gonna do it because we haven't done it in a little while. And then we're gonna see where it goes from there because I think those two things might take up a bit of time. So before we get into the Summer Soiree recap, Ricky, do you want to play a song?
Sure, I can play a song. I just reviewed this album. This week, the review should be up on Friday because it's coming out on Friday, the 31st. The Drowns have been we premiered one of their songs recently. They've been kind of slowly releasing songs for their new album called View from the Bottom, which will be out August 31st through Live from the Rock Room, Bipolar Records, and 1984 Records. It's made up of a very interesting trio. It's the members of the Shell Corporation, Success, and Coyote Bread, and the record's quite good. It's sort of the surprise of the surprise record of the year. If you're into like Cox Bar, Hot Water Music, Bouncing Souls, that and the other members' bands, I mean those kind of groups, you'll definitely be into this sort of the melodic punk thing, but definitely with a different edge and it's pretty unique in that that realm. So. I'm going to play the title track from the album. This is View from the Bottom by The Drowns.
Which is my
right, we're back. So, John, Summer Soiree 2. Where do you want to start here?
Let's start with Summer Soiree 1. Summer Soiree 1 was a concert. It was the first concert I've ever thrown last year. And I can't remember why I wanted to do it. Adam, can you recollect why I wanted to do Summer Soiree 1 to begin with?
I mean, you were probably ranting to me about wanting more whimsy in your life or something like that.
Maybe.
That's usually how these things start.
It doesn't sound far off.
So the idea with Summer Soiree, I wanted it to do something really small. It actually took about 2 years to do a Summer Soiree 1, that was. I wanted it with Mischief Brew, but the schedules could never line up. And then I said to Jack Terrycloth, well, let's just do something small. You'll come down, you'll play acoustic, and that'll be that. And Jack tried to get that to work out. He couldn't really. And then World Inferno posted a thing on their Twitter. They're like, if you want to book us, now's the time to book us. So I said, screw it. And I put up what I would call a non-insignificant amount of money to bring World Inferno down to Philly. And it was Dynamite Adam White came down, and it was our first show, and it was a complete success. Summer Soiree 1 was a total complete success. It was Pushing to the Limit, Crazy in the Brains, Posers, and World Inferno. And World Inferno did an extended set, probably 2 hours. Their encore alone was about half an hour. They were totally into it. It was an amazing show. There was guys crowd surfing with mysterious bags of unwholesome-looking liquid. There's people jumping off the balcony. It was a time, you know.
So I think that like Summer Soiree Run here should just to make sure that everyone remembers this. Like, this was not just like a show. It was not like a gig in a bar that was, you know, like any other. And you were very explicit about not wanting to, you know, just go find a bar where you could book a band. So you had booked an art space, and the show was not simply, you know, oh, here are the four bands that are going to play. You had organized, you know, you and I did like an opening routine.
We opened the show in a dance, doing a dance, wearing tuxedos.
Yes, we were wearing tuxedos that I'm pretty sure your mom
put
on the back of, or did you or your mom?
No, my mom did, definitely. You got to.
Yeah, yeah, right. So we had costumes. There was, you know, we intro'd the bands, we emceed the thing. There was in between sets, you know, we had a. We played Punk's Points kind of like live with the crowd, gave away some prizes. You auctioned off a Jesse Michaels painting for charity. As people walked in the door, you were handing them glow sticks and beads and like a bunch of whatever party supply crap that you could have acquired.
At the dollar store.
At the dollar store, yeah. So it was very much meant to be not simply a show, but a big crazy event. And in my mind, that feels a little unique because you usually don't see something that's thrown with that intent. Like, you'll see shows and then you'll have festivals, but like in between the two, there's a lot of ground that I feel is like untrodden, not trod. Not walked upon, and that's where that show fell, and that's why it felt very special. I mean, it also felt very special because it somehow worked. I mean, you and I were driving out of Philly when the whole thing was done, and we're like, "Holy fuck, no one died!" That was,
yeah.
How did that come? Like, how did that work? In that, all the bands showed up, they played their sets, they got paid, no one was seriously injured, and the cops didn't show up. Like, the fact that all those things sort of lined up well was pretty amazing.
That was, I mean, it was so, we had never thrown a show before. We had zero experience throwing shows. And not only did we throw a show, we throw a show with, like, a bunch of wacky stuff, including World Inferno in a space one quarter the size they usually play. And somehow it worked out. Like, the seven fates were looking after us that day, Adam. I have no idea how that, you know, came off. So I did two smaller shows. I did Cassie Ramone, Joe Jack, Talcum, and Colleen Greeny in the winter. That was pretty chill. I mean, that was just three bands basically doing acoustic or, you know, just solo stuff. So that was easy. In the spring, I did the Spring Slam Down with Crazy in the Brains, Drew Getz, Jade of Posers and Up Up Ups, and that was a low stakes affair because it was successful, but none of the and the whole thing was done like a boxing match, which was cool, and I had boxing programs and stuff, which was cool, but you know, none of those bands are super huge, so if no one showed up, it wouldn't be the end of the world, you know what I mean? But people did show up, which was cool. But after Spring Slamdown, I was like, well, am I even going to do Summer Soiree again? I'd like to, especially since next year is Pug News' 20th anniversary. And I've got a couple of really crazy ideas kicking around in my brain that I'd want to say for Pug News' 20th birthday. And so at first I was like, well, I mean, Adam, how can you outdo World Inferno in 175-person capacity pack show? How can you outdo that? You can't, right?
Well, that's partly the issue, right? Is that came together as something very special, and you know, not to speak ill of other bands, but if you were just to say book, you know, if you were to say book a Nightbirds show, it would be a Nightbirds show, right? Like, it's not there was something about like that size of band and that size of venue that kind of made it work that you'd have a hard time pulling off otherwise.
Right. And you can't discount the fact that they all wear suits and that there's not four of them, there's like nine of them. You know what I mean? So it's like, how do you top that? So there's a couple of acts that I thought, well, I'll build a show around these acts, and none of them were available. I'm not going to name names just because they just weren't available. So it's not cool to, like, you know, say anything bad. They just weren't available. And so I said, well, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. But then I'm like, I want to keep the name going at least through next year for Summer Soiree. I want to imprint that name in people's minds. And so I thought, you know what? I'll counter Bombast with Intimacy. And so I emailed Joe Jack Talco. I said, Joe, you want to do our show? You know, you, maybe a couple others, you know, bands, Quiet Evening at Creep Records. Adam, what? You've never been to Creep Records, right?
Which one did you and I go to? It was like a house kind of place. No. Which record store do you and I go to?
Oh, no, that's Jupiter Records. That's
Jupiter, okay, yeah. No, I've not been to Creep.
Creep Records is a really cool record store in Philadelphia. It's really cool in that it's got a venue attached to it. No bar, none of that stuff, just a venue, 1 foot high, 1 foot tall stage, sound system. So it's a total DIY spot, except for a lot of DIY spots sound like garbage and you can't see anything. They've got a 1 foot tall stage, a sound system, and some light. So it's good, you know what I mean? And so I said, well, we'll do it there. We'll have Joe Jack, maybe a couple other small bands, you know, and really we're just doing it to keep the name alive, and it'll be cool to have Joe Jack because he is a legend and he's the man and he's amazing every time he plays. And then for some then I got the crazy idea. I know I went and saw Pushing to the Limit, Up Up Ups, and a guy called Zero Friends, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to email Stizza. You know what I mean? He's going to say no, but I'll just email him and see. And I think at this point I already booked Crazy in the Brains, but the idea was for Crazy in the Brains to play in their earliest incarnation, which is just Chris on guitar and Brett on xylophone. So it would be like all acoustic, a special evening acoustic that way. It wasn't going to outdo Summer Soiree 1. It would be smaller by design, almost to a cowardly extent that, you know, I can't beat myself, so I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to take the easy way out. Not to say that Joe Jack is taking the easy way out. Joe Jack is the man. But as far as sheer bombast, Joe Jack is quieter than World Inferno. So then I got the crazy idea. I'm like, you know, I'll just ask Stizza Crack of Leftover Crack. Maybe he wants to come down and play some songs too. And so I email him, and then, like, I thought there's no way he would get back to me. He gets back to me, and he's like, yeah, I want to come down. And he's like, I love Crazy in the Brains, and I love Joe Jack. Joe Jack's my favorite artist of all time, which I didn't even know. I'm like, wow, this is making great sense. And then he's like, but I want to play with a band. And I'm like, I don't know if I can, you know, bring down your entire band because it's a very small show. Ticket prices are going to be only $12. And he's like, well, can I play with Crazy in the Brains? And I'm like, give me 1 second. So then I called up Crazy in the Brains. I called up Ernest. I'm like, Ernest, you're playing with Scissor Crack. Don't give me no for an answer. And they actually had a radio program booked for that day. And I'm like, drop the radio program. You're coming down and you're back in Scissor Crack for a special show. And I didn't even know this. Crazy and the Brains are all huge Stizza Crack fans, and they're huge Joe Jack fans. It was like crazy. So they said, all right, yeah, we want to do it. So I said, Stizza, Crazy in the Brains is backing you. So this is 60 days away. So 60 days from the gig, I had Stizza, who had never even played with Crazy in the Brains before ever, have to build a whole set, an entire set. Crazy in the Brains didn't know any Choking Victim or Electro Crack songs. They had to learn them all. Meanwhile, Joe Jack says, oh, I want to debut my three-piece band. So Joe Jack was bringing a special thing, and I asked Pushing to the Limit to come play because they got a new record coming out, and Pushing to the Limit is awesome. So for the next 60 days, I'm working like a madman, getting the goodie bags put together, getting everything set up. In the goodie bags, Adam White or Ricky, did you ever play Hero Quest or Warhammer Quest or Talisman?
I don't think so.
I owned a copy of Hero Quest. It is probably still in my mom's basement.
Did you ever play it?
I'm sure that we did, but I remember wanting it and owning it way more than I remember playing it.
Well, listen, I'm a nerd. So back in the day, my friends and I played Hero Quest, Warhammer Quest, Talisman, like, constantly. We love that game. In case you don't know, Hero Quest, Warhammer Quest, and Talisman, they're all basically the same game. Basically, it's kind of like Dungeons & Dragons, except for there's a board, and you move your guys around the board, and you fight monsters with dice. Basically, like, you roll, if you roll a 5, you hit the orc. If you roll less than a 5, you don't hit the orcs. You know, stuff like that. And I love those games. So I made a fully functional board game that came in the goodie bag, starring the people from the show, and you could be the people in the show as you went through a dungeon, completing band-related quests. Like, in one quest, you have to steal back your van that got stolen by hooligans. In another, a bunch of hooligans are trying to steal the test press of your record, so you have to defend it. In another, you have to venture into the troll's den and destroy their mainframe because they're saying BS on the internet. So I made a fully functional board game that came in the goodie bag. And I didn't think it would be that much effort. It was a lot of effort. You know what I mean? So meanwhile, I'm keeping in contact with Crazy in the Brains. Ernest was my contact. I'm like, all right, how's everything going? And Stizza is an artist. Stizza is a phenomenal, amazing artist. But that being said, he's an artist, you know. So we had to navigate those waters to make sure that Stizza was getting what he needed, that he was happy, and that things were going to work out. Because, I mean, this is crazy in that we've got Crazy in the Brains, who have never played with Stizza, playing a full set with Stizza at a very small venue, 150 capacity, $12 tickets. Meanwhile, 1 week after I announce my show, about 6 to 12 hours after, I say, all right, Philadelphia, it's going to be awesome. Pushing to the Limit. Joe Jack Talcum, full band set, doing Dead Milkman solo tracks. Stizza Crack, backed by Crazy in the Brain, doing all Choking Victim and Leftover Crack songs. Within 6 hours of me announcing my show, or 12 hours, I'm getting some buzz. People are getting excited. Meanwhile, R5 Productions, which is the biggest independent promoter in Philadelphia, they see that I'm getting some heat. So they announced their own show that same day, which was The Impalers. Do you guys know The Impalers?
I don't.
The Impalers is...
Yeah, they're Impalers is playing, like, Not Dead Yet, up in Toronto in October.
Impalers, yeah. The crust hardcore band, not the ska band.
Yeah, for sure.
So Impalers are a very popular underground crust hardcore band, and they very rarely tour, and they just put out their first record in like 4 years. So basically, the crust population is divided, you know what I mean? So I've got competition. Not only that, my tickets are $12, but because crusties, like, just don't care about money, their ticket is only $10, you know? And I was annoyed at R5 Productions, but fair play to, I mean, I'm not dissing R5 Productions, because R5 Productions is a great promoter, and they've done great things for the city, and they have brought in some amazing shows that I have loved. And so I am a huge fan of R5 Productions. But that being said, that one day they were my competition, you know? Punk rock is not a community, Adam White. Punk rock is a competition, and I was playing to win. You know what I mean? So I flyered the city like crazy. I went on the radio to promote the show. I went to probably 15 shows, handed out flyers for this to get people to come to my thing. Meanwhile, give me some quick feedback on this. So a couple of people that I consider to be good friends decided to go to Impalers instead of my show. You know what I mean? And that really hurt my feelings. People that you know, I've promoted in the past, and you know, and said, oh, you, this person's great, that person's great, check them, all this, they went to Impalers instead of my show, and my feelings were really hurt. Am I valid in having my feelings hurt, or could both of us be valid in that my feelings are valid in being hurt, but I was assuming we are higher level friends than they were, and that's more on me than them. What's your? I mean, my feelings were genuinely hurt, and I was annoyed and disappointed that a few people went to Impalers instead of my show that I would consider to be very good friends.
Well, my question is, what's the relationship like with the other people? Because if it's like a close friend that you've had for like 10 years, that's kind of shitty. But like
good friends with the punk rock scene, 3 to 4 years probably.
And are they also musicians?
Some yes, some no.
I don't know. I mean, if the, I got to, first of all, I don't think you should be like freaking out or anything like that. But it doesn't sound like that's the case. I mean, yeah, it's kind of shitty that they didn't, especially because you probably supported some of these people in different ways, trying to promote their bands, I assume. I think you're valid to be a little hurt. I don't think it's worth destroying a friendship over, though. Especially also, like, it's their loss, man. I saw the first video. I haven't seen the second one. That looked like such an awesome time. That's probably a once-in-a-lifetime show.
It was awesome, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. So my read on this is putting on something like this and, like, throwing yourself into it, it creates a certain amount of, like, emotional investment in it. But it's really easy to go on the flip side of that and look at it as saying, like, you know what, a show is a show, and, you know, I don't go to a lot of them, right? Because I felt the same way, where, like, we did that show, me and Mel K did that show in Toronto in February of this year, where we had some bands come up and play, and it was like a punk news thing. And there are definitely people that, you know, And I don't think I'd ever spoken about it to them, but they definitely, you know, went on to the Facebook event and said, you know, I'm coming. And I'm like, you know, I know this person. They know me. You know, they know that we're throwing this show and that we don't normally throw shows. It's going to be a bummer if they don't show up, and then they don't show up, right? So, like, I felt that. But at the same time, I'm totally guilty of, like, not going to shows that are, you know, 40 minutes of travel from me because of the most boring non-reasons. So, like, I get it. People sometimes don't show up to shows. I think you just it's gotta just be water off your back.
Yeah. The other thing that was slightly involved in my hurt feelings was that to a degree, I think Stizza is super cool, and I think Leftover Crack and Choking the Victim are one of the coolest bands of all time. The perception in Philly is that my show was kind of the pop punk show, even though Stizz is not pop punk, but, like, you know, the wacky kids, you know, where the other show was the cool true punks, you know what I mean? And so I got the slight vibe that my friends felt that what we were doing was dorky and the other thing was cool, which, I mean, at 35, I don't give a shit about being cool, but it did hurt my feelings that people, my friends, perceived it that way, you know what I mean? And that wasn't all my friends. A lot of good friends did show up. Rachel, Pat, Society, Rachel Hoflitz showed up. I'm trying to think of who, but we'll get to that in a second. So anyways, to a degree that was beneficial, though, because that doubled my fire. I'm like, I've got competition with R5, who I like and respect, but they were my competition for Friday night. I've got that. My tickets are $2 higher. People think the other one is cooler than us. So I'm just going to double down on the nerdiness, the wackiness, and the goofiness, which is why I made the board game and some other. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to embrace being what I think is punk rock and just being weird and unique and not putting on a uniform, you know? So, you know, a couple of weeks before the show, I'm like, I'm emailing certain parties and certain parties aren't getting back to me. I'm like, about a week before I email certain parties and they're not getting back to you. I'm like, so I email Crazy Nebraska. I'm like, is everything cool? They said, oh, yeah, everything's cool. Everything's cool. So on Friday night, the day of the show starts at starts at 7 o'clock. Music starts at 7:30. I get down there at 4:30. I'm setting up. John Lango of Crazy in the Brains, being John Lango, gets there at 4:45. He starts setting up. I'm like, all right, we're in great shape. We're in great shape. Meanwhile, about 6:15 starts to roll around, 6:30. Just me. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Then at 5:30, Joe Jack Talcum shows up because Joe Jack is the man. And Joe Jack is the most unassuming person ever. Like, he'll just walk in and kind of, like, stand there till you, like, address him because he's, like, kind of, like, he doesn't want to, like, walk in and say, I'm Joe Jack Talcum. You know, like, he's the kindest gentle, or one of the kindest, gentlest, least assuming people I know. He is just a gem. And so I'm like, Joe, what's happening? What's happening? Also, I think he might not like me because he's like so quiet and gentle. And I'm like, Joe, it's great to see you. It's great to see you. And I always take care of the business right away. And maybe he didn't like that, but I like to get the bands paid right when they get there so everyone can forget about it and relax. And I feel that gives us a better show. You know what I mean? Maybe some people would consider it tacky. You know, but listen, you're getting paid, so I want to get you paid. You know what I mean? And also, like, I can never reach. I think Joe Jack is the man, but Joe is an extremely kind person, and every single thing I've ever asked him, he said yes. And so I'm always scared to ask too much. You know what I mean? And I'm scared to apply things to him that he might not want applied to him. Like, the Summer Soirees are wacky. Maybe Joe doesn't want to be involved in, like, the total wacky scene. Maybe he doesn't want to be involved in the board game. I don't know, you know. And I fear that even if he didn't want to, he wouldn't say he didn't want to because he wouldn't want to cause confrontation. I don't know. I think I'm pretty good at reading most people, but Joe Jack, I have a tough time reading. And my main concern with this whole show was that Joe Jack was happy because Joe Jack super helped me out at the Christmas show. And so I wanted to make sure that this was what he wanted and he was happy with it. And I think it was, but I don't know. You know what? Because Joe Jack is a man of few words. On stage, Joe Jack is the most natural person in the world. Off stage, he's a man of very few words. Very few words. So anyway, I'm like, yo, what's happening? And I'm like, let's take care of business. And he's like, do you know what time Sturgeon is getting here? I'm like, no, I don't. Crazy in the Brain says he's going to get here at 6:30, but he's Sturgeon, so who knows? He's like, well, Sturgeon said he wanted to practice before the show with me. I'm like, I'll let you know when he gets here, Joe. you know, and so Joe's like, okay. So then Joe leaves. Oh, and Joe being Joe is the man. He's like, oh, I brought my friend with me. Can she get into the show? But she'll pay if she, if that's not all right. I'm like, Joe, yes, Joe, Jack Tackleman, the Dead Milkman, the guy who wrote Punk Rock Girl, the guy who wrote Methodist Coloring Book, the guy who wrote The Thinnest Line. Yes, you get a plus one to the show that you are co-headlining, Joe. You know what I mean? It's like, so anyways, he goes away. About 6:30, Ginger of the Drew Get shows up. She's helping me out with doors. KB, Adam, you know KB. KB shows up to help me out with doors. Meanwhile, Adam, what your presence was sorely missed. I will say, summer soirees are much more difficult with just one knucklehead as opposed to two knuckleheads being knuckleheaded and running around and doing stuff.
I know, and I'm bummed about that. This was very much a symptom of this show coming together at random when we weren't sure if it was actually going to come together.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, the family was booked on vacation, and yeah, they already hated me, so I sort of couldn't bail. But anyways,
that's a good excuse. But Adam, I genuinely hope you'll be at Summer Soiree 3. And honestly, like, we'll get to it in a second. So anyways, 6:45 rolls around. Crazy and Brains still aren't there. Pushing the Limit's not there. Stiz is still isn't there. Doors open at 7 o'clock. And I'm like, yeah. 6:50, two-thirds of Pushing the Limit shows up. And I'm like, oh, great. Pushing the Limit's here. One-third isn't there. And I'm not even really thinking about it. And they pull into the parking lot across from the record store. I'm like, you guys can't park here permanently because you're going to get towed, like I said in my email last week. They're like, yeah, it's fine. So they start setting up. Meanwhile, there's about two people there at like 7:05. I'm like, oh, God. I mean, luckily, tickets sold out the day of the show, which was great, so I don't have to worry about that. But, like, I didn't want Pushing to the Limit playing to no one. You know what I mean? Plus, we had a very, very strict time schedule. About 7:15... I'm actually busy with stuff. About 7:25, Lita pushes the Limit. She comes over to me. She says, Audrey's not here yet. And then she gives me basically what I would say is probably the best explanation of why someone couldn't come to a gig. And honestly, if they said to me 2 minutes before, 1 minute before, we can't play because of this situation, I would have said, oh, I understand 100%. That is absolutely perfectly okay. That is no problem at all. I'm not going to go into details, but it was a very good reason why someone wouldn't go to the gig or couldn't make it to the gig. And she's like, she's going to be here, but she's stuck in traffic. And I'm like, well, we don't really have any time to spare because we have a strict 10 o'clock curfew. Our time was 7:30 to 7:50, Pushing to the Limit, 8 to 8:45, Joe Jack. No, 8 to 8:40, Joe Jack, 9:50 to 10, 8:50 to 10, Crazy in the Brains, 15, 20-minute set, and then Leftover Sturgeon with Crazy in the Brains. So I'm like, well, we don't have that much time to spare. And so not at 7:30 rolls around. All of a sudden, there's a million people there. And I'm like, 7:30, The band's not ready. There's a million people there. So I say to Lita, you've got a solo thing called Shitty Summer. Can you just maybe do a solo set? And then she gives yeesh to me. I'm like, all right. I'm like, all right, we'll wait 15 minutes and then I'll make a call. We can push it back a little bit, even though we really couldn't. We'll push it back a little bit and then we'll make a call at 7:45. At 7:43, Audrey Crash comes blasting in the door. She goes into the bathroom. 30 seconds later, she comes back out and they're pushing it to the limit gear. She hops up on stage. They're ready to go by 9:45. I used to have Soundman Colin running the sound, but Soundman Colin is no longer Creep Records. So I've got Soundman Will. Soundman Colin was the man, and that he was, you know, Mr. chilled back, laid back surfer. Like, hey, whatever, man, that's cool, you know? Soundman Will was a nice guy, but I think he was not exactly down for our wackiness and our insanity. Am I going on too long on this?
Yeah, that's why we didn't schedule anything.
Fair. So anyways, so he's getting a little uptight. He's getting a little nervous. So then I had KP and I had Ryan Chitty hold up the banner. And then the crowd goes silent. They've got globe bracelets on. They've got slap bracelets on. They've got beads on. They've got tiaras on. The whole shebang. They hold up a big banner in front of Push to the Limit. It says Soiree. Vivaldi goes over the speaker. You know, doo 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 doo. Then an explosion rocks across the speakers, and then it's New Orleans bounce music. I come on out and I go, Philadelphia, are you ready to make some noise? And they make some noise. I said, Are you ready for Summer Soiree too? They make some noise. I said, are you ready for Crazy in the Brains? They make some noise. I say, are you ready for Scissor Crack? They go crazy. Then I forgot where I was, and I said, are you ready for Crazy in the Brains again? And they're like, oh, are you ready for Joe Jack Talcum? They go super crazy. And I say, are you ready for Pushing It to the Limit? They go crazy. Another explosion blasts across the speaker. I grab the banner. Oh, I forgot to tell you, though. Just before Pushing the Limit plays, Lita says to me, oh, is it cool if I park across the street in the parking lot? Meanwhile, the tow truck guy is at the end of the block. And so I do the intro, and I grab the banner, I rip it down, and I run to the audience. Pushing to the Limit goes, we're pushing it to the limit. And they just make this crazy sound, and they bust into their set. Meanwhile, I grab Lita's keys. I run outside to her car. I hop into her car. The tow truck is lining up to get her car. I hop on her car. I blast backwards, and I zoom down the block to get her car away from the tow truck guy. I stash her car. I'm Philadelphia. The parking in Philadelphia and Fishtown is pretty tough these days. So I'm sprinting about 6 or 7 blocks back to the venue. While I'm sprinting, I sprint past this BMW with ground effects that are like neon lights. And the guy yells at me, yo, what is Polo Steve? What does the P on the back of your jacket stand for, bro? Polo? And I yell back, no, punknews.org, it's a website. And then so I run back to the venue. I get there about Pushing to the Limit's third or fourth song. Pushing to the Limit is killing it. The people are into it. Pushing to the Limit is an amazing band. Meanwhile, Stiz is still not there, and Crazy in the Brains are still not there. And I'm like, oh, God. So meanwhile, Push the Limit is playing. Then at their last song, sure enough, who comes in? It's SZA, and he comes into the venue, and I'm like, oh, SZA, all right, like let's talk business. He's like, I can't talk business right now. He's like, I'm on fire. I just rode my bike here. I'm hot and sweaty. And then he goes right into like the pit, where it's like super hot to like watch Push the Limit. You know. Meanwhile, he's wearing like a suit for some reason. So that happens. Meanwhile, Crazy in the Brains then show up. So Pushing the Limit is great. We collect some money for St. Jude Children's Hospital, like we always do. We auctioned off a Jesse Michaels painting. Meanwhile, give me feedback on this. So it was a sold-out show. I had people say, oh, I can't wait to go. People that I kind of know, you know, I can't wait to go. I'm so excited for this. Of course, they don't buy tickets. And then once it sells out, they send me a message. Oh, I was going to buy a ticket, but I didn't. Can I get on the guest list? And I'm thinking, $12, come on, people. But I always say yes because I'm doing so much, it's just not worth the fight. You know what I mean? I mean, moochers. You know what I'm saying? Meanwhile,
you want to fill the room. It's not you're not trying to do this as a business.
Yeah, but I'm
like, all ultimately, if you had to eat a bunch of tickets to have a full room of people getting down to, you know, the bands that you've booked, that's more important than you having made X more dollars at the door.
True, but I'm trying to get people paid. Like, I didn't make any money on this one. You know what I mean? Like,
I get that. I just mean that, like, push comes to shove, I'd rather the people.
Yeah. Well, I would rather the people, but why should the moochers get the bonus when the people that pay to get there don't get the bonus? You know what I mean? Like, the people that pay to get there are more deserving to be there than the moochers. You know what I mean?
No, I get that. I'm just
So anyways, moochers annoy me. But I mean, one of the things that I've learned with this is, you know, here, like when you throw a show, there's going to be people skimming a little bit off the top here and there. There's going to be people pulling some bullshit. And some of it you just got to write off because you can't control everything. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, Adam White, who do you think was more likely to buy a raffle ticket? People that paid $12 to get in there or moochers that got in for free?
I would have to imagine that the people that paid.
Yes. One guy gave $40, which was insane. So thank you for doing that. Moochers, like, oh, I don't know if I have any money. I, with the moochers, I literally stood there and waited till they got money out. Like, I wouldn't leave till they gave me at least $1 for a raffle ticket. You know what I mean? It's like, you can give $1 to kids with cancer if you're here for free. You know what I mean? Anyways, that just annoyed me. Anyways, then Joe Jack Talcum plays, and he gets up there with Woods and Dan Stevens, and they do a set of half solo stuff, half Dead Milkmen. Joe Jack he's amazing. Like, there's so much soul and genuine and authenticity in his performance. And not only that, though, it's like, it's not overly sentimental or sappy. It's funny. Sometimes it's moving. Sometimes it's like kind of messed up. Like, he's got one song called the Child Molester song. I don't think he did that. Or not Child Molester. So I forget. It's called Sex Sting. It's about a guy that cruises the internet for like illegal pictures and gets arrested. So it's kind of like a messed up funny song. I don't think he did that song, though. But he did Dean's Dream. He did I Walk the Thinnest Line. But right before I Walk the Thinnest Line, he says, Sturgeon says he wants to do a song with us. Is he here? And I know that he's outside, like, doing something. So I open up the back door. I'm like, Sturgeon, Joe Jack wants you. And he's like, he's like on his knees, like, learning something on the guitar. And he's like, I'm not ready yet. So I say to Sturgeon, I say to Joe Jack, I'm like, he says he's not ready. He's like, okay. So Joe, being the pro he does I Walk the Thinnest Line. Then he says, now we're going to do Dollar Signs in Her Eyes. And meanwhile, Sturgeon comes in and he gets on stage, and Sturgeon basically says, this is my favorite Dead Milkmen song of all time and one of my favorite songs of all time. So Sturgeon and Joe Jack did Dollar Signs in Her Eyes, which is a lesser known Dead Milkmen track, and it was amazing. Like, it's rare to hear Sturgeon in the quiet, reserved context, but he was. And Joe, first of all, Joe Jack is like just on point. Sturgeon is complimenting him and like musically, and he's doing kind of a type of performance that we very rarely see from him. So that was awesome. They end their set, and it was an amazing set. Meanwhile, Crazy in the Brains had showed up. I go outside after Joe Jack, and I'm like, all right, guys, you better get moving. Meanwhile, Crazy in the Brains just kind of like chilling out. I'm like, guys, you know, we're running late. We need to get moving. So Crazy in the Brains, they set up. Meanwhile, Crazy in the Brains get set up, and then they come out without Sturgeon, and they did about four or five songs. They did their newest stuff. Crazy in the Brains is awesome. Then I guess the biggest moment of the night was Crazy. So Crazy in the Brains did like four or five songs. Then Sturgeon comes out to, I can't remember. Oh, 500 Channels. He comes up to 500 nice. Channels. The place goes insane. Like basically people charge the stage. It's only a 1 foot stage, mind you. So people are like rolling up onto the stage. People are jumping on the stage. It's going absolutely crazy. People are knocking into the speakers. The speakers are going back and forth. And so after that song was over, I jump up on stage. On the way down, I listen to a KRS-One album called it's just called KRS-One. And there's a segment on it where DJ Premier goes, or maybe it's Funkmaster Flex, goes, everyone take 2 steps back or I'm going to cut off the music. Everyone take 2 steps back or I'm going to cut off the music. So that was in my brain. So I get up on stage. I say, everyone take 2 steps back. Take 2 steps back. And people like weren't used to that at like punk rock shows, I guess. And so like people were kind of like scared because I was like screaming. And they took 2 steps back. And then Sturgeon goes, now take 2 steps forward. Then take 2 to the left. And do the hokey pokey and shake it all about. And he totally undercut my authority like that. And then they did I can't remember the song they did. They did Gay Rude Boy. They did all the hit. They did Gay Rude Boys Unite. They did an amazing version of Soon We'll Be Dead. It was like he Sturgeon said, we never do this in Leftover Crack, but we're gonna do it. Ricky, you know if that's true? Do they never do Soon We'll Be Dead? I don't know if he was joking.
Okay,
or not.
so So here's what happened. They did it like once at Tompkins Square Park with World Inferno. There's video of it on YouTube. And then like not long ago, I actually when they had Blackbird ROM with them on tour, like maybe a year or two ago, they actually did it, and I saw them do it. But it's pretty true that they don't play that song very often because there are a bunch of instruments in there that they never have with them. Did they play any Star Fucking Hipster songs?
I'm pretty sure no, but we'll get into that in 1 second. So they did Soon We'll Be Dead, and it really was amazing because Sturgeon kind of sings like Shane McGowan instead of like Sturgeon. And so it was, and I will say Crazy in the Brains gave all these songs such a new dimension because they have a unique way of playing. They've got a xylophone, which really did complement the music and make it different. And it's such a unique sounding set. Meanwhile, people are crowd surfing and knocking at the speakers. Soundman Will comes up to me. He's like, "You need to get them to stop hitting the speakers," which, to be fair, is a fair request. You know what I mean? So I'm acting as a bouncer, kind of. Someone else is acting as a bouncer, getting people away from the speakers. However, I will say, Adam and Ricky, who do you think was a better behaved crowd? World Inferno or Leftover Cracks?
Oh, I'm sure it was probably... Ooh, actually, I've actually been hurt at, like... Leftover Crack show, so I'm gonna say Leftover Crack.
You said they're better behaved, you're saying?
No, they're I think World Inferno is better behaved. How about that?
Someone jumped onto me more or less off of a balcony at a World Inferno show that we threw, so I'm gonna say that Leftover Cracks is better behaved.
Adam, you are correct. Like, I had KB Vickers, I had Ryan, and I had basically one other guy. So basically, there was four of us because I'm thinking this is going to be a rough show. There's going to be a lot of crusties there, a lot of people causing trouble. You know, I don't want any trouble. This is a record store. There's a lot of glass. I don't want any trouble. And bizarrely, the Choking Victim Leftover Crack, like there was some crowd surfing. But, you know, that's just because people were having fun. Like, they weren't being dicks. They were just, you know, having fun, you know. They were so much better behaved than the World Inferno crowd. Like, Adam, I don't think I'm overstating it, unless I am. I felt that the World Inferno show got kind of hairy in a few spots, and I was concerned the whole night. I really was at World Inferno. Like, I didn't have... go ahead.
There was a period in that show where we were legitimately not sure if we had done damage to the venue.
Yeah, yeah. And Adam, if you remember, after World Inferno, the guy that owns that venue was, like, trying to clean the venue by, like, taking, like, Bounty towels and, like, wiping the floor. We couldn't figure out what he was doing, you know? So.
Because the other thing is, like, it's like Philomoka is, like, it's an art gallery, but it's, like, a big open floor space. But it is, like, it, you know, it's essentially a concrete box. And you put all of these... all these Inferno fans into the concrete box and then have them dance like maniacs and pass around mystery bags of liquid. then when they all leave, it, like, the walls were sweating. Like there was liquid everywhere. It looked like the place had been sprayed down with a hose. So yeah, there was a moment there where we all just started like sheepishly picking up the rubble.
He was wiping the floor with towels, and we didn't know what to do, so we tried to help clean up, but we didn't know what he was doing, so we were kind of just walking around and, like, picking up random things. It was like, I felt bad about that. I really did. So the point being is that I was ready. I mean, I was ready for war. I'm like, all right, KB, you and me, it's gonna be like Philly Slayer 97. We're gonna be fist fighting all night long, you know. And it wasn't. Every single person was well behaved and respectful of the venue. Like, they had fun. There was some moshing, but nothing crazy. Everyone there was aware that this was a special gig that was put on DIY. That the venue was not a commercial venue. Well, it's a commercial venue, but it's not like a bar. So we need to be careful and be gentle, or as gentle as we can be, and respectful of the space, because if we bust this place up, we're not going to get to do it again. So, like, everyone was respectful. Everyone, like, that's rare that everyone is respectful, you know? Like, I really appreciate that the fans, like, everyone was cool, is the way to put it, you know? Like, no one...
There's always usually one asshole.
There's always one, but there wasn't this time. There really wasn't. Like, nice. Everyone was cool, you know, and that's amazing. Especially with, like, Leftover Crack, you know? So anyways, they Soon Will Be Dead. They started late because the whole evening was running late. So Sturgeon says to me, well, how many songs do I have left? And at that point, I'm like, you know what? Our curfew is strictly 10, but I'm like... You know what, maybe I'll push it to 10:20, 10:30, and this will be the last show we ever do here, and we'll get in trouble, but it'll be worth it. But then I thought, no, it's like, I want to do that, but this place rules, it's not a bar, it's the only place where I can do this. We'll push it till 10:10, but not beyond. So I'll push it beyond reasonable, not unreasonable, you know. So I said, he played a couple more songs. I said, like, you got like five songs. He's like, how many more do I have? I'm like, you got time for one more. No, I'm sorry. They came up near the end. Joe Jack came up on stage, and they did Joe Jack, Stizza, and Crazy in the Brains doing Punk Rock Girl. And I went out into the crowd with a bag of balloons and dumped a whole bunch of balloons on everybody. And it was amazing. Like, it sounded so good. It was so cool. It was so unique. Like Punk Rock Girl has never been performed like that, and it was awesome. And the best part was, like, I feel as though people appreciated how special and unique that was, and that this is not something that's just another gig. After that, Sturgeon says to me, how many songs do I have left? I said, you got one song left, because it was already like 10:02. And he's like, well, can we do one song and then a cover, which is only a minute long? And I knew which cover they were going to do, and I know it was only a minute long, but I said, yeah, yeah. So then they did Crack Rock Steady, which was awesome, with the xylophone, which was unique. People were having a great time. And then after that, they did a cover of Jim Carroll's People Who Died. It was just noise. It was just people like screaming, people who died. And it was crazy. And it just ended in a big explosion of instruments, and then it just fell apart, and it was the best way for a punk show to end. And then afterwards, people were cool. They got goodie bags. They were respectful. They said, oh, so great that you're doing it. And 10:15, people were out the door, and I was cleaning up, and everything worked out perfectly. I couldn't believe it.
Great stuff, man. I wish I could have been there.
And I wish you too. I wish you'd been too.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm so glad. I remember I was pushing you so hard to video this thing, and I'm so glad you got some footage, because that is some stuff that I'm really glad at least I got to see the video.
Yeah, we should have video of the whole thing. I don't know if I'm, like, the videographer we had was a girl named Kayla, and she kind of knew, and I don't know anything about video, so I said, I'll give you X amount of dollars, good luck. And so I think, considering the supplies that I gave her and the info, I think she did an excellent job. I'm going to review all the videos, and if it's all worthwhile, we'll release it all. But if some of it's kind of like fuzzy or whatever, then we'll just release highlights. So we'll see. But we're going to release video from each band at least. So
either way, but I got to tell you, I think I still think if you're going to do a 20th anniversary show, got to figure out how to live stream it, man. That's going to be
maybe
that would be really cool.
Oh, one thing to cap off is one thing I have to end. You know, first of all, Pushing to the Limit was amazing. They were so awesome. Joe Jack and Sturgeon. It was a $12 show. They could have showed up and, like, Joe Jack said, sure, I'll come play acoustic. Sturgeon could have been like, I'll come play acoustic. They could have come and done, you know, 8, 10, 12 songs acoustically, you know, real chill out, you know, nothing special. And people would have been like, that was cool. People would have been satisfied. You know, they wouldn't be blown away, but they'd be like, I got my $12 worth. You know what I mean? I got what I was expecting. This is why they are great. Both Joe Jack and Sturgeon is, I mean, nobody got rich off this. I mean, everybody got paid, but nobody got, like, rich. You know, nobody got leftover crack money or whatever, you know. And nobody got Dead Milkman money, but people got paid. They put so much effort into this. They could have just showed up and basically phoned it in. But instead of showing up and phoning it in, they did something special and put in a lot of extra effort to make this a once-in-a-lifetime unique thing. So I really have to thank them. And I mean, honestly, like no matter what anybody says about any of those acts, you know, like the proof is on tape. You know what I mean? Like they came and brought the A game and did the extra effort to make it extra special. Whereas a lot of other artists would have blown it off, that I'm not doing it, or, you know, I'm too cool or whatever, or, you know, I don't want to put in all the effort. They put in the effort and basically, once again, explained and demonstrated why they are champions.
Yeah.
John, on the one hand, it is spectacular that you've pulled another one of these off. On the other hand, I feel like the fates must conspire against us for the third, and the third is going to be it's going to be Altamont, right? Like, there's no.
But Adam, we're not going to give all the behind the scenes details, but Adam, you got a couple of frantic messages from me, and I thought this was going to be the one that crapped out. But I mean, Adam, when are we going to crap? We're four for four right now. When are we going to crap out? I'm getting scared.
I mean, really, you just have to assume that everything will be great forever and you're invincible. That's the safest way to go about it.
I mean, a big part of it is it's not all of us. It's the artists wanted to succeed. I mean, let's be truthful. World Inferno came to rock the house. You know what I mean? Sturgeon and Joe Jack came to rock the house. They wanted it to be good, and they worked to make it good.
So, well, and the people that came to the show.
True.
Decided to be respectful about it. You probably had very little to do with a lot of that.
True.
All right. John, play a song from one of these bands, and then we'll come back talk about some records.
Let's do Sturgeon and Crazy in the Brain. Actually, you know what? Let's do everybody doing Punk Rock Girl. I might not release this video. The quality on this is not fantastic, just because it was so noisy. But so unfortunately, you guys have been to shows and you've seen video, and the video doesn't really do the show justice. Like I was there, you know what I mean, and the video doesn't do it justice. Mm. So the videos here look cool because the show was really cool. The audio recording is all right on this, but let's just play this for posterity's sake. This is STZA, Joe Jack, Talcum, and
Crazy and the Brains
doing Punk Rock Girl.
It's easier for all of us, right? That's right. When a cover can be, you know, difficult and screwed up sometimes, this one will be less so. We promise.
Back. So what we're going to do this week is have a little record collecting chat. Talk about some capitalism, some acquisitions, some stuff we bought for money. And if this portion of the show isn't your bag, then you know, if you PayPal $5 to adam@punknews.org, then you can skip this. But otherwise, you have to stay here. So, John, you've been talking for a while, so we're gonna leave you alone for a bit.
By all means.
And I'm really gonna throw this over to Ricky, because Ricky, you are the, I mean, I've got some interesting shit here that I've acquired that I kind of wanna brag about, but Ricky, you're the man. You do the Instagrams and the Snapchats and the, you know.
Actually, I'm off Snapchat. That thing is just dead. But anyway, I appreciate it.
See, that was sarcastic. I wasn't expecting that you were on there in the first place. So, anyways,
it was. All right. So,
you are the consummate collector. So, what have you been digging on?
It's been a while since we've done this. So I'm just, so I have the old Instagram open here, and I'm trying to figure out when the last time we did this was, and I'm just going to start from, I haven't gotten a whole lot. I'm waiting on a bunch of shit to come in in September and October. But so far it's been pretty quiet for pre-orders, and I haven't been to record stores that much lately. But I can go back, let's see here.
As you're looking for stuff here, I just want to say that, like, I'm having that problem right now, and I don't normally have that problem. where I had gone and I dug out from under the stairs in my house out of a box that I haven't opened in like 10 years, all these like old Nintendo games. And I'm like, nerds on eBay want this shit, right? And turns out, yes, nerds on eBay definitely want that shit. So I built up this little war chest of money from like a bunch of stuff that I sold on eBay all at the same time. And then I turned around and just spent all of it in an hour and a half on vinyl and pre-orders and things like that. Nice. Because that was my, right? But now I kind of forget what I've ordered. So, on the one hand, it wasn't real money. Like, it wasn't money that came out of my bank account, right? It was money that, I exchanged basically a bunch of dead weight for PayPal money, and then I turned the PayPal money into record pre-orders. But none of it was money that was ever, money for groceries or whatever. So now I'm like, did I order that, the new Fucked Up record, or did I not?
You better, Adam. You better.
I don't know. I think I did, but I'm not sure. So now I've got to, like, I don't know, go through like my PayPal receipts to figure out what the fuck I actually ordered. So okay, continue.
So yeah, I mean, like, I'm waiting for like, if I can go do the quick list. I mean, I'm waiting for the Dwarves 7-inch. Swing and Utters comes out day after tomorrow, so I'm not worried about that. Dirty Nil, I'm waiting for. Nightbirds, the AJJ comp that's coming out. I pre-ordered the Laura Jane Grace album, the Debt Neglector EP, and some other stuff. So I'm waiting on that stuff. So I'll have plenty to share later. But now that I have the old Instagram out, I can tell you that I'll go back to, I don't know, July, I think that's fair. I got the Essential Antarctico Vespucci Volume 1 because it had a couple of bonus tracks on there. I got the gold version that's from Asian Man. They're great. I know I'm kind of like neutral about Jeff Rosenstock and Chris Farren and his solo stuff, but I've always loved Fake Problems, and I love Antarctico Vespucci, so this was a cool pre-order. These next three, I've played tracks on the podcast in the past. I got Steve-O and the Crippling Addictions, first pressing from Say 10 Records. It's like a olive green translucent record with white in the middle. Then Pity Parties, Are You Happy at 7-inch from La Escalera, which I really, really like. Every time I listen to it, it's like this Coke bottle translucent thing. Then I got the first pressing of that Beach Rats 7-inch, Wasted Time. That's on red vinyl from Bridge 9. And I've been giving that a spin for the last month or so. I really, really enjoy it. Then I know this is ridiculous again, but I got to give a shout out to Pirates Press Records because they sent me a bunch of shit. Not shit, but a bunch of stuff. They sent me the Barstool Preachers Grazie Governo. Just on a black vinyl, and then the Territories record, I think it's called There and Gone. I know Tom Trauma, he reviewed it, but what's interesting is like the album came out on like 15 flexies that are all like different color picture flexies and stuff like that, and then both of the CD versions came in that same package, which was crazy. So thank you to Pirates Press. Totally unnecessary, but it's really awesome that you guys are sending that to me, stuff to me and Tom. Then I've been slowly building up my Cobra Skulls vinyl collection. I'm very behind on that, but I found a decent price on Discogs for the Cobra Skulls Never Be a Machine 7-inch. It's on white. It's on white vinyl. It came out through, oh, that's Red Scare. It's like almost a 10-year-old EP, which is crazy to me. Now, I saved the best for last because I'm actually curious. I'm wondering if one of you got this too. About a month ago, Nightbirds posted on Facebook, and they had 8 copies of Mutiny at Muscle Beach, excuse me. But with, they have like the alternative artwork for the first pressings or the special pressings or whatever. They had a different version of it. Let me backtrack. Mutiny on Muscle Beach's like first pressing, the special edition, came with alternative blue artwork. They were on Facebook. They posted that they had 8 copies of the album, but with alternative artwork on that was black. And it was first come, first serve. Whoever got it got one of the 8. They're all signed by the entire band. On like, I think it's like bronze Sharpie or something like that. And, that came in the mail a few weeks ago. And, it was for a record, it was a little on the expensive side for me, but I was sitting there wondering, like, should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I do? And I just emailed them. I said, fuck it. Just send it to me. I'll deal with the financial pain later. And
Henry Rollins earlier, says you never regret the records you did get. You only regret the ones you didn't get.
That is so true in this case, because I got number 1 of 8, and I am so happy with it. I could not be happier. This is probably one of the top rarest records I have now in my collection, because it's just so limited. I skipped one other thing. I'm sorry. That was like the big buy of like the summer. I also got the Interrupters' "Fight the Good Fight" on translucent pink vinyl. I think the record's really good. As much shit as I've given them on the podcast throughout the years, I really enjoyed this one. What I really appreciated about this one is that the layout of the album art is phenomenal. It's done so well. Whoever laid it out did a fantastic job. It's a gatefold too for one record, so it's super high quality in that regard. I got the this would be my last one, but I also got the Character Actor 7-inch Speaking of Nightbirds that came on like a purplish splatter, multicolor splatter 7-inch, and it's a fun little 7-inch if you haven't heard it yet. That's about all I've gotten over the summer so far. I'm waiting on a bunch of stuff. But it really it's mainly that Nightbirds record that I'm quite happy with. Adam, I'll pass this on to you, I guess.
John, this is a concerning development in my life, but I don't know why, but I'm getting into tapes, John. I keep buying tapes.
I approve. I approve.
And I'm not entirely sure what is fueling this, but I see bands doing something cool, and I really like the music that they're putting out, and they're clearly operating in this like bedroom recording mode. Like, we're going to record a bunch of songs, you know, not in a real studio, just ourselves, and it's going to be like lo-fi and shitty but kind of awesome for that reason, and we're going to throw it on Bandcamp, but you know what, we're also going to make some tapes. And I'm like, I want the tapes. I have way more of a drive to give the band money if I'm going to get a tape, even if I don't think I'm ever going to listen to the tape, then give them money and just get some MP3s on Bandcamp. It's like that little bit extra of having like the physical something as a huge mental leap for me in the amount of worth that I'm putting on the product being created.
Adam, that's what I'm saying about cassettes. Cassettes are appreciated and more saved than digital stuff, because you have to do, quote, work to listen to it and get it. You know what I mean? So you're more invested.
I'm looking at these two cassettes that I have sitting here in front of me, and what I'm amazed with about this is I'm looking at them, and they're both purposefully low effort from a like production value standpoint, and I'm looking at it and going like, well, I can do that, right? Like it's broken some sort of mental. I mean, like, John, you and I have done tapes, but when we say that, I mean like you have done tapes that I have participated on, right? There's still, I can still like hold those tapes at arm's length and go, you know, outside of me recording audio for these with you, I'm not super sure how these things happened. So, you know, so someone else did it, right? It's too hard for me to do that, right? But I'm looking at these, and everything about them is as DIY and budget as you can get. But in both cases, they, you know, did something to make it unique, and that little bit of like interesting physicality, like, just made all the difference in me paying for it or not. So on the one hand here, I have a tape that I'm sure I've talked about. I talked about it on one of the prior episodes. There's like a garage psych artist out of Montreal named Paul Jacobs. He just went and released an EP called Story About Anything. And so this tape is like a lime green tape. He has gone and just like white sticker paper, like, stickered on the name of the tape onto it, right? In the same way, John, that you had done, you know, some of the lower production value Punk News tapes, right?
Indeed.
Sticker it on there. But Paul's thing is that I don't know if amateur is the right word for it, but he's like an amateur cartoonist, right? So he's been doing all these like things with drawing and you know, does a lot of show posters and stuff like that. So he decided, I'm going to press 100 of these tapes and I'm going to hand draw to cut the cover to each of them. And they're each going to be unique. So I'm sitting here with like cover 53 of 100 for this one. But like everything about the tape is just like handwritten. Like, you know, guy wrote it in with a Sharpie, drew a little picture on it and stuff like that. And I'm like, it's like, you know, that's completely unique as a product, right? Like, there is not another one of these that exists because he drew something unique on each of them. The other one that I'm sitting here looking at, there's a band called Rotten Column out of Toronto. Rotten Column is basically, it's everybody that's in Tough Age, but Penny from Tough Age is singing. And an extra guitarist, or a couple extra guitarists are in the band. One of the guitarists that's in the band is actually a pretty renowned poet out of Toronto, and I'm not exactly sure how she's in this punk band, but like she is, and it's kind of fun that she is. But in any case, so, and they're just doing, you know, these goofy punk songs. But like the tape itself, it is a red cassette tape in which they have literally taken a Sharpie and written Rotten Column on it. And then they went and they printed some, you know, a bunch of, again, like, probably like unique per cassette kind of J cards that they printed and cut up and put it in. And they had a couple EPs worth of material that they had thrown out on Bandcamp that were like more or less demos. And they like put one on each side of this tape. And, you know, I was at a show and I'm like, I really want this. I'm like, I'm not sure why I really want this, but I do. So, John, there's something interesting about like bands that are on this like super underground fringe of the punk world where they're not getting, they're not even at the point where they're worrying about pressing this stuff on vinyl. And they do press vinyl, but just like not for this stuff. Like this is bands recording in sort of like this interesting between records, between proper full lengths mode, where like I don't know if pre-internet you would have necessarily had an avenue for. And that I'm kind of formulating a thesis in my head about like why is there a bit of a tape resurgence, and I think it sort of goes part and parcel with what, you know, this completely free digital music universe that people are living in. I mean, free as in free money. I mean, free as in like you're not at the whim of like the record company saying like, oh, you can't release that now. You just released something 3 months ago. You got to get on the road and support that one. Like all the gatekeepers are gone, and these bands are just doing things completely on their own. And you know, if you're doing things completely on your own, sure, you might record a record and put that record out on, you know, or sorry, let's say record an album and put that album out on vinyl at some point. But a lot of these bands are like in between those big formal efforts, you know, still, you know, recording and doing stuff and making music. And it's sort of like cassettes are like an easy, interesting way to do something with all that in between material.
Plus, and it's fun, yeah, to be part of a secret club. You know, it really is.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm super stoked about that. Just the other thing here, just that I want to make mention of, because I think people should go buy it because it's really good, is there is a band called Alienation, Alienation, Alienation. They have an EP out called Bitter Reality. It came out on, it's a 45. It came out on the label Warthog Speak, which is a Californian-based label that releases a lot of like scuzzy garage rock and D-beat and, you know, all kinds of things that make a lot of noise. But anyway, so Warthog Speak, it's got a bunch of the guys from the Bougie Boys in the band. It is a completely reckless hardcore record, like relentless, punishing. You know, the tempo never drops. The whole thing is over in like 10 minutes. Everything's being played at completely breakneck speed type of hardcore record. But like, because, and I might just be reading this into it because I really like the Bougie Boys, but there's this pop sensibility that is like buried under 17 layers of sludge on here, that you listen to all this like this noise and then all of a sudden it starts to click in where you're like, oh, this song is actually pretty rock and roll, like you know, beneath the storm. And anyway, it's really good. So if you're looking for something that is loud and out of control, Alienation is the name of the band. Bitter Reality is the EP they have. I don't even know if it's a functioning band or anything, or if it's just a bunch of guys got together from that scene and just made something noisy. But you should get it. It's on the label Warthog Speak. John?
Adam?
You want to talk about anything?
Yeah, I'll go quick because I've been talking a lot tonight. But this is a cool one that I got is... I'm a huge KRS-One fan. He's my favorite hip hopper, tied with the BC Boys. KRS has got a lot of albums. About 4 years ago, he released a digital album called Never Forget, which actually is without question one of his best later day albums. I mean, it's only like 9 tracks, but he's just on fire the whole time. It's excellent. However, he released a digital version, and they reportedly released a physical version. But I believe the only place that you could get it was on tour while he was on in France, and he only did like 3 shows in France. I saw about 3 years ago, I saw one copy go up on Discogs for like $200. But listen, I mean, I'm not going to be spending $200 on a 9-track CD that's about 18 minutes long, you know. But it was frustrating for me because I have every single other KRS-One album, including some really rare ones, including Now Hear This, and I've got the other The World Is Mine, or whatever that one. Like, I've got his two rarest ones, except that one. That's the only KRS-One album I don't have a physical copy of, the most rarest one, and it's one of his best later day ones for sure. And so I've been searching eBay, Discogs, at record stores for 4 years looking for this thing. He's got his own website, which is I don't know if you guys would be kind of familiar with the scenario is. Hip hop or soul or artists in that general vein, like as they, you know, get past the peak of their career and just kind of doing their own thing, like their family members start managing them and things kind of discombobulate and out of whack. You know what I mean? Like they're not real good at posting when they're going to go on tour. They're not real good about announcing new records, that kind of thing. Have you guys noticed that? Punk rock too, I guess, to a degree. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of an exact example, but it seems like a type, like where you get the industry out of it, but at the same point, you're not doing it DIY, and then it's like you and a bunch of idealistic friends doing it. It's DIY in that, you know, your social circle is now, you know, your wife and your kids.
Right. And that's good because, you know, there's no middleman taking their money, but sometimes family members aren't always great at, you know, running a business. And so KRS-One, I think, falls into that category. So anyways, about 2 months ago on his website, he's like, well, not him, the Facebook said, we've got some new products in the website. So I go on there and sure enough, there's Never Forget. I'm like, oh, wow. Basically, he must have basically sold some in France, brought them back in a box and forgot about them. And now he's selling them online, $10 each, whereas one went for $200 like 3 years ago. So I ordered it. I'm like, oh, boy, 1 week goes by. I don't get it. That's cool. 2 weeks go by. I don't get it. That's cool. 3 weeks go by, I don't get it. That's cool. 4 weeks go by, I still don't have it. And I'm like, yeah. 5 weeks go by, still don't have it. 6 weeks go by, I get this weird email from some like shipping company I never even heard of. They're like, oh, we're sorry if there's been a delay in, you know, order processing. We're mailing everything out now. I'm like, oh, okay. 7 weeks go by, I don't get anything. 8 weeks go by, I don't get anything. 9 weeks go by, I don't get anything. 10 weeks go by, I don't get anything. And I'm ready to, I'm like, well, you know, they must have just posted it by accident. I got burned, but, you know, I really wanted it, and I'm not going to get it. What are you going to do? But I emailed this weird shipping company, and I'm like, I didn't get my CD. Can you mail me I didn't want to say, can you refund the money? Because I didn't want my money back. I didn't want my $10. I wanted the CD, you know? And I'm like, can you mail me the CD? Because I don't think I got it. Like, really respectfully, don't hear anything for 4 or 5 weeks. I don't hear anything. Then, lo and behold, in this beat-up envelope, totally handwritten, I get it in the mail. I'm like, what is this? I open it up. I pull out, like, kind of like this beat-up copy that has obviously been used and played a lot. And on the back, it's got, like, a sticker that says, sample's not cleared. And I was so overjoyed. I was like, I got this rare, through persistence and harassing my favorite artist personally, I got this rare item that I'm pretty sure they posted it by accident, and they didn't know what to do, so they just sent me like somebody's personal copy, you know what I mean? And I don't care, because I got this super rare Karis 1 CD, and it's one of his best, and I was thrilled to get it, so that was cool.
That's cool, John.
Another quick one is, you know, not every record story, not every record search is a victory. I was down at Repo Records in Philadelphia, great record store. They had this African Bambaataa record. African Bambaataa is a famous hip-hopper, although he's got a lot of issues these days. Do you guys know the kind of issues that African Bambaataa has these days?
No.
He's got a Michael Jackson kind of issues. I picked up his record. He's a DJ. He's not a singer. And he's got an album that you saw in like the late 80s. Like in the late 80s, a lot of like early hip hoppers and DJs and go-go guys, is they would have famous people on their tracks to kind of get the people interested, and they weren't interested. So I got this album. It's called The Light, and it's got African Bambaataa, George Clinton, and Yellow Man doing a track together. And I'm like, oh man, I have got the – even though African Bambaataa's got problems, I've got to hear Yellow Man and George Clinton on a track together. Guess how it is.
How is it, John?
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's so bad. Like George Clinton, Yellow Man, they're doing their best, but the beat is just like this terrible, like 80, like late 80s, like bad, corny hip hop. It's like it was made in like 7 minutes, you can tell. And it's bad. It's real bad. And I wanted to be Yellow Man and George Clinton. I'm like, yes, yes. Two of my favorite artists together on the same. It's bad. It's bad. What can you do? They can't all be winners. Here's my last story. Integrity just released a record, an EP. They cover a band called Gizmo on it, which is a Japanese hardcore band. I've never been a fan of Japanese bands. Japanese hardcore bands, Gizmo, Zao, Gauze, some of the other guys, just because it seems – a lot of those acts seem very cliche to me. And as it was explained to me, yes, even though some of the lyrics are weird and cliche – the fact that they're using these lyrics in these unusual ways is what's interesting. Not the lyrics themselves don't have to be interesting. It's how they're using lyrics in an unusual way is what makes this interesting. Not to mention they kind of blend D-beat hardcore with Motley Crue glam rock kind of sound, which is unusual. The most important example would be Gizmo's track "No Blockade for the Pussyfooter," which the lyrics are "No blockade for the pussyfooter, you know the demagogue, you know the heathen, you know something." It's like the lyrics like make no sense, and you can say, "Well, that's easy for you to say, John. I'd like to see you write a song in Japanese," and I couldn't, you know. But that being said, the lyrics to Gizmo are kind of cliche, but the point isn't that the lyrics make sense. The point is that the lyrics are kind of written in a weird context, and are a interesting melange, if you will. So I'm not necessarily a fan of Japanese hardcore now, but I'm becoming more interested in it. But I hope I'm not becoming a cliche of myself. So my first quest was I've wanted this record for a while. I got Zao's "Making Love with the Devil" 7-inch, and it's Zao, which is an early Japanese hardcore band. It's like halfway between Discharge and Slayer. And it's kind of like Satanic, and it's kind of like Discharge, but they dress like Motley Crue, and it's a very weird and unique record. I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying it might be great. I'm not sure. I'm still on the fence about it.
I like that you're not sure that it's good, but it might be great.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't understand it, and maybe that's on me. You know what I mean? And so I'm
yeah, all right, I get that.
And so I like to me the lyrics come across as very cliche. But I'm willing. But there's more. But they're not just a cliche metal band. There's more to it than that. So I'm willing to say, am I missing something, or am I just falling into the trap of the Emperor's New Clothes and it's really not that good? But because super cool people say it's good, I think it's good. I'm not sure yet. I need more time with this record, Adam.
John, I think you should take the time and report back. You played a Gizmo track on the last podcast, I believe.
I believe I played Integrity covering Gizmo.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yes.
And I do like that because I like integrity. That kind of is what opened my eyes to some of the Japanese bands. A lot of musicians I like love the Japanese bands. I've never been able to get into them, but I'm willing to dive into those waters. But I don't want to fall for it just because everyone else falls for it. You know what I mean? Like I want to come to it on my own understanding and figure out if I really like it, and I don't want to be swayed by other people.
That makes sense. All right, so what do we got? Do we have anything else to?
Well, listen. Thank you for indulging my story about Summer Soiree. I know I babbled on a lot, but it really was a big adventure, and I'm so happy it came out well. Thanks to everybody that came. Everyone was super cool. The bands were super cool. And Adam White, I really hope you can come as my co-host next year. I really do. And Ricky, I hope you come next year too to Summer Soiree 3. I've got some crazy ideas in my brain. I'm going to start working on that in December or January, shooting for July or August, and we'll see what happens. It might not happen, but it might happen. Who knows?
John, if you stick your neck out there, at one point you have to fail, and I want to be there to see it.
Great, thanks. Thanks for the vote of confidence. Oh, and one other thing is, listen, two quick things. Is A, are we overkilling the readers with Summer Soiree? I realize I've been putting a lot of Summer Soiree stuff up there, and I realize I've been tooting my own horn a lot, but I'm very proud of this. Have we been killing the people with too much Summer Soiree stuff? Quick answer. What do you guys think? Or is it enough? Or is it adequate?
I think as long as we balance it out with just normal news, like I think these videos are legitimate in my opinion.
I don't know. Fuck the readers.
Second thing is, you know, I've been getting a lot of hate lately on the site, and sometimes it gets to me, not because I respect these people, but like you post an article, you're like, this is so neat, and you open it up and it's 40 comments about how much people hate you or think it sucks. Not that I care about what they think, but it's like it's always a shock to me. Like every single, I don't know why I don't learn. I'm like, wow, this is so neat that, you know, I don't know, Integrity's covering Gizem. That's so neat, you know. And everyone's like, this is stupid, you know, John, blah, 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 blah. I've gotten a lot of hate from certain people with regard to Summer Soiree, but it is so satisfying to me that it totally just bounces off, because I know this was awesome and I know this was unique, and it just goes to underscore that they don't really do anything, these creeps. Like, they've never done anything. And so I really shouldn't pay any attention to them whatsoever, because they've never done anything. And the only reason they're barking is because they haven't risked what I've risked to make something neat happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the success of this should far outweigh whatever hate you get. I got a little bit of hate when I announced the book.
Not a ton. Yeah.
But you know what? Just go for it. You've done this. It's already, what, this is a second or third one? I mean, come on.
What I'm saying is more so than any other thing. It's totally bouncing. I'm I could never foresee this happening, and it happened, and it was a total success. So people can say what they want, but it really is meaningless. Like, it's like, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, if it was people coming up, you know, to your show, which is empty, and saying, John, I hate you, and I will not pay to go to this show, and then they get in a car and drive away. Well, that might be something that I am going to go, ooh, you know, maybe the world does hate me. Maybe these things aren't going to work. But that's not the case. The bands wanted to play the show. People came to the show. You know, what people on the internet think should be of very little interest to you.
Yeah. So anyways, thanks for indulging me, and Summer Soiree 2, total success. I'm very proud. I'm very thankful of all the bands and the audience, and hopefully we'll do it again.
All right, so if anyone wants to send us email, it is podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. I'm going to end this with a totally random song that I think is fascinating, but probably sounds like complete shit. But there is I've been learning about the early punk scene of the island of Newfoundland, and there were a few bands there that were considered like the first wave punk bands from Newfoundland. And the one that I think is totally fucking fascinating is a band called Da Slime. And when I say Da, I mean like Da, like D-A space S-L-Y-M-E. So Da Slime, they form on Christmas Eve 1977. they get together in it, or they form a little bit before that, but on Christmas Eve 1977, they get together in a radio station that's closed for the holidays, and they use the radio station's studio to record some early stuff. The first song that they released from this is really the band's theme song. It is a song called Piss-Eyed Sleazoid. And I would like to read the lyrics to Piss-Eyed Sleazoid, because it really is it's important poetry. Here we go. It's we're too loose and to slime, and we're feeling fine, drunk out of our fucking minds on a load of cheap wine, drinking beer all night, sleeping in all day, waiting for the pogey check to come our way. Well, I'm a piss-eyed sleazoid with a head full of rum. I spent all my money, now I go on the bum. And it goes on from there. And it's like completely lo-fi and distorted and glorious.
Is this Hosercore?
This is like Newfie Hosercore. So it's this is something that I've become very interested in the past few days, and I know very little about, but it is something I'm doing my research on. So this is the song Piss-Eyed Sleazoid from Da Slime from 1977, and that's all. So see you guys next week.
Piss-Eyed Sleazoid, 1, 2, 3, 4. Fucking minds on a load of cheap wine. Because, yeah.